Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to The Transfer Window, the podcast that takes you inside the biggest deals at the biggest clubs in world football. I'm Johnny McFarlane, and today I'm joined by pod regulars Duncan Castles and Ian McGarry. This week, PSG are looking to bring Paul Pogba to Paris. Will Manchester United sell their midfield star? Liverpool seem to be the quintessential cup team. We explore who they can sign to turn them into Premier League champions. And Sam Allardyce looks to be in trouble at Everton, and Wayne Rooney is also potentially on the move. We go inside the Goodison turmoil. Okay, well, the big news today is obviously the story that Duncan has broken on the Daily Record, which is that Paul Pogba is generating some interest.
Yeah, the story is that Paris Saint-Germain are trying to find out if Manchester United are serious about selling Paul Pogba. Pogba's been offered around Europe's top clubs by his agent Mino Raiola. This happened earlier in the season when Pogba, Raiola and Mourinho came into conflict over Pogba's positioning and duties within the team. A story also broke in the Daily Record, and we talked about in detail on the Transfer Window podcast, and that's kind of bubbled away through the season. We had Pep Guardiola announcing just on the eve of the derby that that Raiola had been in touch, not with him because he doesn't get on with him, but with the club, asking whether Manchester City would be interested in taking Paul Pogba. Raiola's done that with Real Madrid, done it with Juventus. He's basically gone round the clubs in Europe he feels have got the financial wherewithal to cover a transfer fee, which would be obviously substantial given that he cost Manchester United an initial €105 million, and wages, which are the highest at Manchester United. Paris Saint-Germain are interested. They see him as fitting into that category of superstar players they've recruited with Qatar's money in their desire and intention to win the Champions League as quickly as possible. They've tried to get the player before he went to Manchester United, were unable to do that, and they now have him being presented to them as a possibility by the agent, and they're trying to work out whether Manchester United would countenance selling a player who was the centrepiece of their rebuilding work under Jose Mourinho when he came in 2 years ago. The suggestion is that Pogba would still be open to the move. Raiola definitely is. Whether Manchester United are prepared to sell, it doesn't look that way from what I'm hearing from my contacts. But it's a situation we should definitely pay attention to, because I think we had a chat about this like 3 or 4 weeks ago in the podcast, and we suggested that if there was a way it could be manufactured as looking as though Pogba was forcing the move and wanted the move, and the money was good enough that United could present it as having the cash to not only buy a replacement for Pogba but to strengthen others, the areas of the team, then maybe the deal could be made to fly. And what's certainly the case is Paris Saint-Germain are trying to find out whether there is a possibility before getting involved in the details of making a transfer deal happen, which is what modern clubs do these days. You find out if the player wants to come. You find out if the other club are ready to sell. And then you put a lot of effort because those two conditions are met.
I'd say in these situations, guys, and I'm not involved with Manchester and Paul Pogba on this, I have to say, But if a club says to me, we need a central midfielder, do you have options for us? And then I'll ask the question, well, who's leaving? And then they will give me that information, etc. So I know what the photo fit of the new midfielder they want is, whether it's someone exactly the same or whether it's something a bit different with different skill sets and permutations to his the way he can play, etc. In case of Paul Pogba, he's quite unique. He does have the ability to score goals, to make goals. He has a very deft touch. He's very good at passing. His range of passing is very good. What he doesn't appear to have right now, and what Mourinho, I think, is his main complaint about Pogba, is he's not tactically disciplined enough to play in a Mourinho team as effectively as Mourinho would like him to play. And that has led to the problems with which is his best position, and you know his playing time, etc., etc. But I genuinely believe Pogba, considering injury and suspension, has returned a pretty good season for Manchester United this season, and has the ability and definitely has the potential to produce an even better season next season, and then a better one the season after. What he needs to do is buckle down, listen to his coach, and play the way the coach asks him to play, and then that way he can become the player that his potential suggests. So the question I would ask with regards to Paris Saint-Germain's interest in Pogba is, who would United replace Pogba with? Because at this moment in time, I don't really see a player out there, certainly an obvious one, who can come in and who has, you know, similar skill sets, who has the physical attributes, who has the understanding that Pogba has, in order to replace Pogba. And then again, we also have to take into account that Mourinho prefers a team unit and not a team of stars. So if Mourinho has a master plan, which none of us is aware of yet, Duncan, you might be, where he's going to bring in a player who's got different attributes to Pogba in order to make the team more effective, then that's a different scenario altogether. The other thing I've float on this argument is, and this, you know, is a sort of different story altogether, but it fits in with Paris Saint-Germain's recruitment policy, is that I've heard in the last few days that Real Madrid have reignited their interest in Kylian Mbappe, who obviously is currently on loan at PSG, and there is a contract stipulation that he will be transferred for a serious amount of money when the season ends. But the Real Madrid are exploring the legal possibilities of buying out that contract from Monaco and effectively hijacking Mbappe's transfer to PSG in order to take him to Real Madrid for more money, obviously, to Monaco. Now, if that is the case and that's what's going on in the background, you can see why PSG would need to replace one of their Galacticos in Mbappe with another one in Pogba.
I think it'd be fascinating if Real Madrid can make a deal like that happen. It would be a huge embarrassment for Qatar, and I would imagine it would see them, if it was to happen, it would see them replace their lawyers and their negotiating teams immediately, so that something like that couldn't happen again. Because obviously the loan deal was only loan with the obligatory purchase was only set up as a way to avoid financial fair play concerns, which are also a factor here, obviously, and that's probably the hardest part of the Pogba deal for Paris Saint-Germain, is not raising the money to do it. Qatar have got unlimited resources and they're prepared to throw unlimited resources at that team, very much like Abu Dhabi and Manchester City. But they're limited by getting around UEFA regulations and the pressure that's been put on them by the traditional moneyed clubs in Europe over them taking Neymar and Mbappe last summer, targets for all of those other clubs, and pushing the prices of essentially every top player up with the fees and the salaries they gave to them. Paris Saint-Germain are determined to hold on to Neymar, although Neymar continues to push to be allowed to go to Real Madrid. And I don't see any way that they would allow Mbappe to go voluntarily. Again, we've had stories that Manchester City are exploring Mbappe's situation. in the hope that Paris might have to sell him because of the financial fair play punishments are tightening that UEFA are threatening. That's true. City would like Mbappe. They tried to get him last summer, were unable to. They see him as the perfect fit to Guardiola's system, and you know, understandably, because for me, the best young player in world football at the moment, and the real kind of heir apparent to Messi and Ronaldo when it comes to Ballon d'Ors in the future. But I think Mbappe will stay. I think ultimately Neymar will be forced to stay, and I think Paris Saint-Germain are working on a way to further strengthen the squad as much as possible, because so they can land that Champions League next season.
I suspect, Duncan, there's a bit of mischief going on here, as there always is with Real Madrid. From what I've heard, they've asked to see the contract that Monaco have with regards to selling Mbappe as part of the loan deal, to find out if there are loopholes that can be exploited. The notion legally that Real could buy out the contract which Monaco currently have with PSG over Mbappe is not unusual. That's a possibility. I think you're right. Qatar would be sacking their lawyers if they felt that this watertight deal they had would not be going through. But let's just take a step back and think about the bigger picture. Real Madrid are obviously been in constant pursuit of Neymar, which PSG have constantly rebuffed. They have flirted with the possibility of saying we'll send Bale or Ronaldo or Benzema or whoever, maybe two of those three, to PSG if we can get one of your star players in return. Neymar obviously being the golden goose, Mbappe being a very close second in terms of the prize. So I do think there's a little bit of cage rattling going on from Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. They want to see what's possible and what's not. We know that Florentino Perez, the Real Madrid president, is hell-bent on recruiting at least two, if not three, new high-profile Galactico players to the Real Madrid team, which has failed so miserably in La Liga this season. Bizarrely, or you know, if for the rest of the world of football, winning the Champions League has become a little bit boring for Real Madrid. And Perez himself has said that La Liga must become a priority because they are losing, obviously, a lot of ground to Barcelona in terms of being champions in their own country. And it's becoming a little bit embarrassing for Real. So, as I said, bit of saber-rattling, bit of cage-rattling going on between Real Madrid and PSG, but the potential permutations for how that affects the summer's transfer window are fascinating.
Well, carry on, Duncan.
So it's an interesting to view that as part of a potential strategy to get Neymar out of PSG, whether they're trying to find some legal grounds in which they can threaten PSG over Mbappe and try and change their stance over Neymar. What I would say is that Mbappe had agreed to join Real Madrid last summer, had given his word to Florentino Perez. All the details of the contract were sorted out between the clubs, and he and his father then reneged on that deal to go to Paris Saint-Germain for more money, and that caused a great furore at Real Madrid that this pair had acted in that way. Was considered extremely ungentlemanly on their part.
And remember, Duncan, that was a repeat of what happened with Neymar as well.
Well, Neymar was slightly different because Florentino Perez messed up the deal in sort of phone calls with
yes, with his Neymar. Father, yeah.
Offended him in a phone call over his attitude. I think at that time wasn't quite aware of how aggressive Barcelona were in trying to get the player. They thought they had the deal stitched up, and essentially Florentino Perez blew that deal. And the whole thing, of course, was a mess with lots of hidden payments and ways of keeping money away from Santos, and you know, years of court cases that have ensued. But what I would say is that on that Mbappe point, Mbappe made the decision last summer to not go to Real Madrid because he preferred to go to Paris Saint-Germain. So for Real Madrid to actually be able to take him this summer, there would have to have been a change in stance on Kylian Mbappe's part that he doesn't like Paris Saint-Germain and he'd prefer to be in the
Well, future. I think one thing which has emerged as well, and this is more through Neymar's camp than Kylian Mbappe, who obviously is a France international player and is happy playing in the French league. That's where he's played all his career, is that Neymar has become quite quickly disillusioned with the lack of competition. He plays, almost chooses his games for PSG. They win 4-1, 5-1. They effectively skate their way to a title and French Cup double, but then they fail in the Champions League. And so, you know, any player at Neymar's level is saying, well, can I really spend my career playing effectively 12 competitive games a season to try and win the Champions League, as opposed to 55, 60 competitive games a season, winning a very tough title, as well as competing in the Champions League. Now, as I said, I think the case may be different for Mbappe. He's younger, he's grown up in the French League, therefore he still sees that as a prize worth winning. But I think in the case of Neymar, there's certainly a degree of, let's just say, reflection on his decision to move to France and play for a club which effectively in a one-team league. Hence, the consistent interest from Real Madrid, even from Barcelona to a certain extent, about taking him back to Spain, and where Neymar sees, you know, his competitive football future. Will he ever win the Ballon d'Or playing at PSG? Only if he wins the Champions League. Are they any closer to winning the Champions League this season or next season? No, they're not. So I think that's the kind of problematic situation which Neymar certainly finds himself in right now. It's all very well getting paid 500 grand a week, but I think now he's looking at it and thinking, yeah, am I, you know, throwing my career away here, because where are my trophies coming from in the future?
Yeah, I agree with all of that, you know. I think the difference between Neymar and Mbappe is that Neymar is a spoiled kid in his attitude to life and football, and Mbappe, ironically, being a lot younger than him, is quite a mature individual.
Okay, well, from the ups and downs and potential moves at Real Madrid to Liverpool, they are Champions League opponents. Guys, there's been a lot of conjecture about Liverpool and what they're going to have to do in the summer. I believe John Aldridge was in one of the papers saying that they need to spend £200 million to become a team capable of challenging at the top end of the Premier League. Where do we feel, Duncan, that Liverpool have to strengthen, and how do they do it to shake off this cup team tag that they have been given?
Well, they definitely need to strengthen. It's not hard to pick out the areas. It's, you know, goalkeeper, need another centre-back. They probably need to strengthen at full-back. They definitely need to strengthen the field, which they will do, and they already have Naby Keita lined up to come in. For me, they need at least one more forward, and they definitely need a forward of a different type, i.e. a player who's comfortable playing against a low block defence and doesn't need space to run into. It's just, I hear all kinds of explanations of why Liverpool are so many points behind Manchester City in the league this season, despite having reached the Champions League final, to do with not turning up on the day, or they don't have a deep enough squad and they're fatigued. For me, it's very simple, and you can see the pattern in the games where they drop points. They drop points to teams who sit back and don't give the forwards space to run into, play a structured defence and try and hit them in the counter-attack, take a goal at a set piece. Whenever Liverpool come up against those teams, if they don't score first, they have real problems. And you just got to look at West Bromwich Albion relegated from the Premier League. Three games against Liverpool this season, drawn 2-1-1. Manchester United, both times played a sensible strategy against them. A clean sheet at Anfield, beat them comfortably at Old Trafford. Last weekend, when Liverpool needed a result at Chelsea, to get to be more comfortable at the Champions League qualification for next season. And let's not forget that they're going down to the final week of the season with that in doubt. Chelsea, Antonio Conte does the obvious thing, plays deep defence, lets Liverpool come to him, looks to score a goal, counter-attacker, set piece, and then has a pretty comfortable ride to the end of the game. And any team can apply those tactics to against Liverpool. They're not always going to work because Liverpool do have quality players, but the difference between a Liverpool side playing a team who set up the right way, a sensible way against them, and playing a team who leave them space to play into, even the best team in the league, Manchester City, is really night and day. And that, for me, beyond any recruitment issues, is the biggest thing that Liverpool have to solve if they want to turn themselves from a team who can produce compelling, brilliant, exciting football on the day to a team who are genuine challengers for the title. And they, you know, you really do only have to look at the Premier League table to see how far away they are from being genuine challengers for the title the way they're playing at the moment.
Duncan, who would be the ideal striker that you're talking about, the guy that can break down that low block? Are we talking about a Lewandowski type?
Well, I think they probably need two things. They would be better if they had a Lewandowski type or a Romelu Lukaku, who you can use as a reference striker, who's happy with aerial balls, happy sitting in front of the defence, receiving the ball and allowing other players to play off them. But I actually think they also need a forward who can break the lines. So Mo Salah, if you watch Klopp's press conference after the Chelsea game, he actually talks about Salah not scoring in the previous two games because he didn't have space. So he kind of gives the game away there that Salah, for all the brilliance of his seasons, for all the goals he scored, he struggles when he doesn't have space to run into. And he can occasionally score goals from outside the box into the top corner, but he's not good at dribbling through a packed defence. And they've really lacked that since they let Philippe Coutinho go. He was the guy who could break those situations, who quite often, or certainly more often than any of the players they've got, was able to score from outside the box, but could also break, pick the lock of a defence. A Juan Mata type. I wouldn't recommend Juan Mata to Liverpool because he doesn't have the physical attributes to play in their standard system. But they need a player, for me, in addition to that different type of centre-forward, they need a player for me who can break a packed defence with skill, as opposed to the three forwards they've got who all want to run onto the ball, run into space. That's what they're really good at. That's what they're deadly when you give them the opportunity to do. But if you put people in front of them and block their path, they don't score very often.
If I were to pick two players that would really make Liverpool Premier League contenders, I'd say Christian Eriksen and Sergio Aguero, which it's easy to say that, obviously much harder to buy those players, but Eriksen's a game breaker. He's also a set piece specialist since Coutinho left. Liverpool have lacked someone who can actually make goals out of set pieces. The delivery's not there anymore, and there's certainly the direct threat from a shot, a free kick within 30 metres is not there either. Eriksen, as we've seen this season, last season, is very adept at, when there is a block defence, picking the pass, which allows one of the strikers, be it Dele Alli, Harry Kane or Son, to move on to that pass without running with the ball at his feet. So it's basically a two-point move. Pass from Eriksen, one or two touch, or just straightforward goal from striker. Now, I'd say Aguero would be an interesting one if Liverpool were interested, because he's the striker that could play between the lines that Duncan said they need. I don't think that, despite his record goal scoring stint at Manchester, I still don't think that he's Pep Guardiola's first choice for next season. Whether or not he'd consider a move to Liverpool, I don't know. But interesting in the last few days to see Liverpool linked with Naby Fekir and Christian Pulisic, because they would be players who would augment what they've already got and potentially provide a different kind of strategy when Liverpool run out of ideas playing plan A. I think Naby Keita will make a difference as well, because he can play box to box and he can probably take defenders away from players like Salah, Mane and Firmino by running at them or even just passing through them, and then therefore make space in behind. But I agree with Duncan. I think it's odd that Klopp, for all, you know, he's a claimed tactical genius, hasn't worked this one out yet, and certainly hasn't actioned to buy the players that they need in order to make a difference.
I think, Pulisic, you're absolutely right. There's a long-standing interest in Pulisic. A lot of it motivated by him being an American superstar. The commercial value involved with that, and the owners of Liverpool have wanted a top-grade American player in that team for a long time. Pulisic was also promoted to Borussia Dortmund's first team squad by Klopp. So there's a direct link between the coach and the player there. He's a player who's interesting a lot of top Premier League clubs, and he won't be cheap to get out of Dortmund. When I last asked, I think that they were talking about an asking price of about 70 million euros for him, which has probably gone up since then. Also agree with you, Christian Eriksen would be perfect. But I think Christian Eriksen would fit in easily into any Premier League team at the moment. I think he's an exceptional talent, and the range of his midfield play, his creativity is incomparable almost. You know, you've got Kevin De Bruyne, who would be on a different level from him. I think he's probably getting to the same sort of level as David Silva these days. If Liverpool were to try for Eriksen, I think they would find a lot of competition from clubs with more money and were Daniel Levy to countenance a sale to another Premier League team.
I think Real Madrid, going back to Florentino, have also got an eye on Eriksen as a long-term replacement for Luka Modric. And of course, let's just say the account details are well known between Tottenham and Real Madrid. With regards to transferring money as well as players, Luka Modric being an example, never mind Gareth Bale. So I think if Eriksen goes anywhere this summer, and I do think he's got a little eye on it. I think he thinks that, you know, he's done a bit of an apprenticeship, having moved up into the Premier League and proven himself to go to Madrid. I can see that happening this summer. I can't.
Well, he's owed a new contract, isn't he? He's
absolutely
markedly underpaid for his quality for. He's a top Champions League player now, isn't he? As opposed to just a top Premier League player.
Just looking ahead, guys, and I know we'll go into this in a lot more detail in coming episodes, but where are we at with regards to this enormous game? Real Madrid going for an unprecedented third European Cup in a row. Ian, do you think Liverpool can stop Madrid?
Can Liverpool stop Madrid? Can Madrid stop Liverpool? Tactically, is Zidane brave enough to do what Duncan's already set out as the way to upset Liverpool in terms of the pattern of play? And when I say, is he brave enough? Is Zidane brave enough to effectively renege on the great Madrid tradition of attacking football, swashbuckling style, blah, 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 and playing the trident of three attacking players in that system in order to give themselves the best opportunity of creating goals and scoring goals? Or does he become suddenly a pragmatic coach in the much more kind of, let's just say, perceived ugly image of Jose Mourinho and say, I've watched the videos, I know how to stop them. So to win win the club's third European Cup in a row, I'm just going to play in a way which I know will upset Liverpool. And then Real play on the counter-attack and therefore play Liverpool at their own game. That's going to be the most fascinating aspect, I think, of how the teams set up, line up, and then play out their game plan. I don't see Klopp doing anything different from what he's done, because I thought personally he would have changed it at Stamford Bridge last Sunday and been more pragmatic as well as resting players. But instead, he put out effectively what looked to me like his Champions League first 11, a Champions League final first 11, and failed. Now, some of those players looked distracted. Some of them looked tired mentally or physically at Stamford Bridge. If I'm Klopp, I'm very worried about that, despite the fact I've got, you know, 2 weeks, almost 3 weeks to sort it out. But I'd be worried about that. I think Liverpool are hitting a bit of a wall right now. And the some players are already distracted by a Champions League final. They know it's effectively, you know, could be the most glorious moment of their career so far. And also the Premier League top four. Well, it's not safe, but they play Brighton on the last day, and Brighton are already safe. So they already beat Brighton. Brighton's heaviest defeat this season came against Liverpool at the Amex when they won 4-1. So I don't think Klopp's too worried about making top four. And therefore, he will, I believe, just play Liverpool at high tempo that he always has done. He will ask them to do that. But he has to, beforehand, regenerate energy in some of those players, if not all of them, in order to do that. Therefore, it's up to, I think, Zidane to make a decision about how he plays. I suspect what we'll get is two teams going at each other's throats, in which case it could be an absolute goal fest. And one of the most entertaining finals that we might ever see.
Yeah, I've no doubt that Liverpool can win the final. If they get the first goal in the game, they've got a real chance, because then Madrid will have to come to them. Or particularly if Liverpool get the first goal late in the game and Madrid are then forced right on the front foot, you can see then Liverpool taking another goal on a counter-attack and that being enough to win the match. I disagree with Ian in terms of Jurgen Klopp being comfortable about Champions League qualification. I think it's a major concern for him. And you've seen that in his reaction to the recent series of bad results they've had in the league. Ironically...
Duncan, you've not been to some of the parties I've been to in the last couple of days, so I'll leave it at that.
Well... There's a difference between your inside information of where Brighton are for that final game and Jurgen Klopp's concerns going into the game. But I was just going to say the irony is that the man who's probably made it easiest for them, or the team that's made it easiest for them, is Manchester United with their performance at Brighton on Friday night. Because if Manchester United had got a result in that game, as they should have, if they'd been focused anywhere near the intensity with which Brighton had played, then Liverpool would have a serious final match in their hands with Brighton if Brighton had needed to get a point or more out of that game. Just one sort of final thing we should say about Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool. For all we're talking about Liverpool as being a cup team, Jurgen Klopp's record in cup finals is actually really poor. Mm. He's, I think, been to 6 major cup finals and hasn't won one since his first, which was in 2012. So lost Champions League final, 2 German Cups, a League Cup and a Europa League. So something needs to change.
But Duncan, we all know that there is no law of probability in football. Like, same as tossing a coin, you know, there is... No, nothing to say that the next cup final won't be the one he wins.
No, it's not a probability thing, but I think you contrast Jose Mourinho's record in cup finals to Jurgen Klopp's record in cup finals, and then ask what's the difference between those two. And it's essentially what you said. Jurgen Klopp will play the same way every time.
Ian, Duncan's remembering Jim McLean's days, so he's a natural pessimist, of course.
Yes, I went too much.
I mean, was it 7-7 they Dundee United lost in a row?
I forget the actual numbers. I forget having attended many of them.
Yeah, he's in denial. It's not just a big river in Africa.
Okay, at that we will move across to the other side of Merseyside. Does that even make sense? I'm just going to carry on regardless. To Everton. Sam Allardyce, under a wee bit of pressure, does he have the backing? And also, Wayne Rooney, is he a man that is looking to move on for a second summer in a row?
When a club sends supporters, this now infamous questionnaire asking if they're satisfied with Sam Allardyce's performance, as a manager, I think you know that the writing's on the wall. It seems to me that Allardyce, in terms of his performance at Everton with regards to games won, points gathered, and, you know, where they finished in the league, would at most other clubs guarantee him another season at least at the club. However, clearly, what's happened is that the new owner, the new investor, believed that Koeman clearly wasn't doing the job that was needed. They tried very hard, as we know, for Marco Silva and two others. And Allardyce was, a very poor fourth choice. In fact, it was even the case that Allardyce was considered and then not offered the job before he was then offered the job. So Allardyce himself must have felt he was on a bit of a sticky wicket here. Go back to the questionnaire. For me, that's just a poor ploy by the club to pass the blame away from themselves for Allardyce being sacked. They will say it's what supporters wanted and we listened to our supporters. Now, it's my opinion that if you ask supporters for their opinion on whether a man should stay or not, then you as well just close the club down there and then, because it just gives, incredible power to people who don't understand how football actually works. I'm not decrying or even being disrespectful to football fans. They are the lifeblood of the sport, and if they didn't turn up, then we would be shutting every club down. But the fact of the matter is, where does that end? Do you then do a survey and ask the supporters who should play in every team selection? Do you ask them who should be on the bench? Do you ask them what their prediction is going to be for the league place? And if it's not high enough or it's not good enough, then do you change the entire squad? It's ridiculous. It's an ad infinitum, ludicrous notion that fans should be allowed to have a say in such a, like, the most key appointment of any football club. So I think Allardyce is doomed. I think he knows he's doomed. I think he's saying all the right things in order to make sure he gets as much of a payout as he can. And as we know with Allardyce and as we know with the Premier League, he'll roll on to another job. He will. He said he was retiring after he left Crystal Palace. And in fact, they haven't had to pay back the bonus that Allardyce got for keeping Palace up just to get him. So not just employing Allardyce was expensive, but they also had to pay back something of £2 million to Palace because Allardyce wasn't prepared to give that up because he'd signed an agreement with Palace that he wouldn't join another Premier League club within 12 months. And he said, I'm retiring, I'm going to spend time with my family. Next thing you know, first decent job that comes up, he's employing himself. And that will happen again because that's what happens. I don't think it's correct. I think we should be giving younger coaches more of a chance, but that is what will happen. Now, who comes in at Everton? Well, Sergio Conceição at Porto has been linked again. Marco Silva is still out of a job. And that was their first choice. But to me, there's no doubt that Allardyce and Everton will part ways after the end of the season.
Well, to go back to your link, Johnny, denial doesn't run into the Mersey, but there's often a lot of denial around the Mersey. I think Everton's situation from... I've actually been asking quite a lot of questions about what's going on at Everton and whether they have already decided to replace Allardyce over the past couple of weeks. Marco Silva has definitely been approached by people representing the club or an element of the club to assess his interest in becoming their manager next season. I'm told there is, from the Everton side, there is no deal. He hasn't been given the job, and also they insist there's no pre-contract with Marco Silva. From Marco Silva's side, he seems to think that that job is his if he wants it, and has been excluding himself from the candidacy of other positions that have come up in the last few months. For example, Southampton, West Ham have had a period in which they were scouting around for managers. He seems to have excluded himself for that as well. So that's definitely a live possibility, and it makes perfect sense because they were prepared to hire him through the season and pay a large amount of money to Watford to hire him. What I'm told is no final decision has been made because the ownership is still split there. The Farhad Mashiri fronted consortium that bought into the club before the big spending of last summer does not have majority control yet. They have an option to become majority owners, but that option hasn't been activated. And until it has, I'm told nothing will be actioned in terms of a plan for next season, a definite plan for next season, which is why there's so much noise around this club of potential candidates for manager, potential transfer plans, whether Allardyce stays or not, whether the sports director stays. A new chief executive is definitely coming in. They might be changing their scouting structure. Essentially, the whole thing is up in the air. And it's kind of a frightening situation for Everton fans in the sense that they've had one summer which was supposed to propel them back into contention, at least for Europa League places, at least to try and get them in amongst the big six as one of the you know top clubs in the Premier League. Definitely not to have a end up with a season where they were worried about relegation and had to turn to Sam Allardyce as manager for a period. And it's you know it's been noted to me that Everton spent more money on transfer fees gross than Manchester United did in the last window. But their squad is still a basket case, you know, a Frankenstein squad in many ways and understandably so when you're buying players like Morgan Schneiderlin, Wayne Rooney, who Jose Mourinho spent a long time actively trying to get out of his club. You buy them and end up starting them as your midfield against Manchester City down the line. And now we're going into this summer and we're talking about Wayne Rooney potentially going being shifted out by Everton, which tells you that Everton should never have bought a player like Wayne Rooney in the first place for all the glamour and the emotional attraction of it. To take Wayne Rooney and put him in the middle of a Premier League midfield these days is pretty much a suicidal move from a football point of view. So they have a lot to sort out. There's some big decisions to be made there. And until those big decisions are made, I don't think they're going to have a coherent strategy for the coming season. And it's quite possible that they will just drift along as a mid-table club until the ownership issue is resolved and a proper spending recruitment management plan is designed for coming seasons. And there's no guarantee that will be this coming season. It might be the season after before that happens. That's what I'm told.
I think in amongst those other players like Morgan Schneider and David Klaassen has been an absolute enigma. You know, spent, I think, around £18-19 million on the Ajax midfielder and he's barely played a game. Shane Tosin as well, who came in January. We assume Allardyce's he approved that move. Again, he's scored, I think, 4 goals, but it's a long way to go to proving himself being a you know Premier League striker who can take Everton forward. In terms of Rooney, there's never any smoke without fire with regards to former England captain. Everton unfortunate position in that Rooney's transfer to Everton was financially linked to Romelu Lukaku's move to Manchester United. So my understanding is that Everton aren't even responsible for the majority of his salary that Manchester United allowed Rooney to leave on a free transfer to begin with when his market value was arguably around £20-25 million. So they saved on that and that was indemnified by the Lukaku fee. But also that because Rooney was on around 250,000 gross a week at Manchester United, a salary which Everton cannot afford and would not pay, that it's subsidised by Manchester United up to a point. Now, that was to avoid, in Manchester United's case, them paying Rooney around £23 million payoff. That would be equal to the 2 years left on his contract when they got rid of him to Everton. So the reason that it's not a big deal for Everton to lose Rooney, as well as not a big deal for Rooney to leave, is that Manchester United are still responsible for that payoff. So Manchester United will either continue to pay or at least compensate Rooney's next club to the effect of his salary at United, or they will need to negotiate what effective was a redundancy payment to Wayne Rooney, even though he's not played for them for a year, which would see Rooney pocket around, you'd have to say, 13, 14, maybe up to £15 million to move on to a MLS club, which would then only afford to pay him around 100 I say only obviously in realistic terms, 100,000-120,000 a week.
Poor guy, how will he live on that?
It's difficult these days, you know. I mean, you know, footballers today, how do they get by? It's difficult enough trying to buy a ripe avocado, you know, in Liverpool these days. But
that's the most Brighton thing I've heard, Ian, I have to say.
Indeed. And remember, it's a ripe avocado. None of this, you know, one you have to put in a drawer for 2 weeks either, Johnny. Has to be able to eat it that night. So, so Rooney may well be eating his avocados somewhere in America, if that's indeed his tipple these days. But remember, the MLS season is not even halfway through yet. And so Rooney moving there would require him to play on for another 4 months up to October, November, depending on who he joined and if they made the playoffs. And then he would get sort of 4 months off. So Rooney may or may not fancy that. He may decide just to wait and join next February. But as I said, Rooney leaving Everton is no big deal for either party because Rooney will still be reimbursed to the amount of money that he was owed by Manchester United, and Everton themselves will not be losing a huge value asset either.
Okay, guys, I'm going to move us on to the quickfire round because, as usual, we are running over time. What we're going to look at today is managers and who would be an ideal boss for a number of clubs that I'm going to give you. Now, some of these clubs still will have a manager in place, so there will be a number of pieces that would have to fall into place for some of them to require a manager, but we're looking for the ideal boss nonetheless. So I'm going to start with you, Duncan, and I'm going to say PSG.
Paris Saint-Germain, I've made the decision. Thomas Tuchel has been offered that job and accepted it. 2-year contract, I'm told. Definitely not the ideal boss for Paris Saint-Germain. I think they're making huge mistake there. I think the ideal manager for them is a guy that they've offered the job 2-3 times before, and that's Jose Mourinho.
Ian, Napoli.
Yeah, I think Antonio Conte is on the radar at Napoli, and I think would be a good fit. He's got that passionate and confrontational side to his character and his coaching, which they appreciate in those environs. Obviously, did a great job with Juventus, and Napoli will lose Sarri, I believe, this summer. I think there's a bit of an impasse between him and the chairman. There's a fear on Sarri's part that he'll lose some of his top players who've performed outstandingly this season, taking the grand old lady to the wire in terms of the Scudetto. So, but Conte will only go there if he's got, obviously, some guarantees with regards to not selling those players, or at least not selling all of them, so that he can challenge. Conte's not someone who likes losing football matches, never mind titles, despite the way they've thrown it away at Chelsea this season. But so I'd say Conte would be ideal for Napoli.
Real Madrid.
I don't think Mauricio Pochettino is the ideal candidate for them, even though he has a lot of contacts with Florentino Perez and in his mind has been invited to take that job on. On the current market, the ideal manager for Real Madrid. Be interesting if they could get someone like Pep Guardiola there. And
Oh, let's just see, with his assistant Luis Enrique.
Yes. That would be an entertaining Spanish league season, given current political circumstances.
Okay, Ian, and given that this is a hypothetical, think about the building blocks of this falling into place. So the next one is Spurs.
I thought you were going to say Arsenal, given that they actually are replacing their manager. I was going to get first shot at that
one. I was thinking Real Madrid might, you know, lead into Spurs.
Okay, that's fair enough. Marco Silva, I think, is someone who has been earmarked by Daniel Levy as someone who fits into Pochettino's football philosophy. His would be good at progressing younger players, introducing them to the team and making them first team regulars, etc., etc. I think Duncan's correct in the earlier part of the podcast that Silva will probably go to Everton, but that doesn't mean to say that Spurs would be his next stop. So I would say with Spurs, listen, if we're talking, you know, and you give me license to talk in, you know, the ideal, the heavenly appointment, I would say that actually Luis Enrique would be the best man for that job, because he has, again, the right mentality, the right philosophy of football, and also the winning mentality, which Spurs desperately need to take them to the next level. So if I was Levy and I'm selling one of Kane, Dele or Christian Eriksen, they're all three, to Real Madrid this season, then I would say to Luis Enrique, I'll give you the 15 million net you want to come here and be manager, and shove Poch off the bridge to Real.
Everton, I think have got, in lining up Marco Silva earlier in the season, I think they made a very good choice. And I think whoever gets Marco Silva and can give him the framework on which to work, i.e. a proper budget and proper organisation, allow him to change the squad, is going to have a very good Premier League manager. So given where Everton are and what it's possible for them to attain as a manager at the moment, I think Marco Silva is a good shout for them.
Ian, you've been fairly consistent throughout the entire last 6 months that Chelsea are going to go for Carlo Ancelotti. You're not going to change your mind now, are you?
No, I'm not. I believe that Ancelotti's hand has been strengthened in recent weeks. Luis Enrique has certainly met with Arsenal representatives about going there. There's been no contract offer yet. And their interest is in Maurizio Sarri from Napoli on the basis of this is Chelsea, this is not Arsenal. Should they decide not to go with Ancelotti? So I think there's at the moment, Chelsea's biggest problem is that Antonio Conte is not going quietly. He wants a payoff. He doesn't want to be paid his weekly salary, which is what Chelsea have stipulated that that's what they will do. They'll pay salary until he finds another job. And so there's an impasse between Conte and Chelsea with regards to he wants a payoff which will indemnify the 2 year left in his contract. So he wants the full year. Chelsea's saying, no, we'll pay your weekly wage. And so at the moment, there's a bit of a standoff with regards to that. And that's stopping Chelsea from actually signing a pre-contract with another manager, because clearly under employment law, that would be illegal. If that weren't the case, I believe Ancelotti already have a contract with Chelsea. I don't think Roman Abramovich wants to go into the unknown again. I think he does want a return to Ancelotti. I do think it'll be a shorter contract this time, maybe 2 years. And I do think that at this moment in time, Ancelotti is the ideal candidate for Chelsea, because they're a club which is, you know, in a bit of a, not say crisis, but they're certainly, you know, FA Cup is not going to be enough for them. They're still struggling to make top four for Champions League. They need someone to resurrect them, to give them confidence back. And Ancelotti's man management skills are perfect for that. And as long as he doesn't lose the likes of Hazard, then I think he'd be able to do a good job in terms of building a team to challenge for the Premier League next season.
And finally, I'm going to give you both an opportunity on Arsenal, because obviously it is the big job. We know it's up. So Duncan, first of all, who's your pick? Who's the ideal candidate for the Gunners?
Look, you've asked Ian about Tottenham and Chelsea, and you know, got Arsenal as well. There's three top Premier League jobs available, or potentially available this summer. Two for sure, one perhaps. For me, the best candidate for any of those jobs is a guy who we mentioned last week, and that's Rui Faria. I think in this current market, there's a real lack of top-class managers, and that's why we're seeing a lot of big clubs looking for managers and not many taking a final decision, because they have an uncertainty who the best candidate for the job is. And I think this is a sort of period where you go for someone who's under the radar, who has all the skills to be a top Champions League manager, who's won the Champions League twice as essentially a co-manager to Jose Mourinho, won titles in every country he's worked in. He has the skill set. That's the guy I would recommend to any of those clubs, particularly Arsenal, who've probably got the biggest rebuilding job on their hands of those three.
Ian?
I think it'd be a slight risk that Arsenal wouldn't take, because Rui's never coached as his own man, as it were. I do regard his credentials as very, very high. And it's clearly the case that he wants to make that leap. But look, ideal for me, for Arsenal, and again, people won't agree with me, but I think Brendan Rodgers, I've said it many times on the podcast, I believe that he has it in him to have a proper go at a big club, having left Liverpool the way he did, and that his philosophy of football, his style of football, his man management and the detail that he shows in his everyday work, as well as the fact he's a young manager and he's a British manager, which is something I know for a fact that Josh Kroenke, Stan Kroenke's son, is keen on potentially revitalising at Arsenal Football Club after 22 years of French influence. So I would say Brendan, I'm sure Celtic fans won't thank me for that, but as I said, Brendan's an ambitious man who sees his future back in the Premier League, and I think Arsenal would be perfect.
Okay, I'm going to bring this particular transfer window to a close. To continue the debate, you can find us all on Twitter. I'm at Johnny R. McFarlane, Duncan is at Duncan Castles, and Ian is at Garbo SJ. To get the pod as soon as it becomes available, please subscribe at iTunes or our new provider, Acast. We'll be back next Tuesday before 3 p.m. and it will definitely be Tuesday next week. Hopefully we won't have the same technical issues that have dogged us this week. So until then, thanks for listening.